call the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, 1-800-824-BONES, or visit aaos.org.
On Friday, March 21st, family, friends, and fans will be gathering at Birdland to celebrate the 85th birthday of the legendary Marion McPartland. Hosting the eventful night will be ABC News anchor Peter Jennings, and honoring the timeless pianist will be such luminaries as Karen Allison, Bill Charlap, Robbie Coltrane, Jim Hall, Curtis Steiger's Dr. Billy Taylor, Clark Terry, Phil Woods, and a whole bunch of others. And comedian Alan King will also make an appearance. Marion will perform sets with two different rhythm sections, bassist Bill Crow and drummer Joe Morello, and bassist Gary Mazzaropi. And drummer Glenn Davis. Portions of the show will be taped for broadcast on NPR in June and will be hosted by Charles Osgood. When you consider the career of Marion McPartland, it soon becomes obvious that the remarkable breadth and manner of her accomplishments are in all likelihood unmatched in the history of jazz. Marion has been performing professionally for 65 years now and also hosts her own radio program on National Public Radio. It's called Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz, which is celebrating its 25th year on the air, and I am honored and privileged to welcome Marion McPartland onto Anything Goes. Good morning, Marion.
Lise, nice to talk to you. My goodness, I was listening to that list of accomplishments. That's not me. That's someone else you're talking about.
I know that feeling. Isn't that a remarkable thing? It is you. You get to own it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for making time for me, and I am really honored and pleased to have you on the phone, and happy birthday.
Thank you.
First of all.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Yes.
Who was playing that background music?
Oh, some woman named McPartland. I don't know.
No, was that actually? Was that really a record of mine?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
It's funny. It didn't sound like me. I thought that must be old. or something. It didn't sound like...
Oh, gosh.
Anyway.
Well, it's a duet album you did. Let me see, now I've lost the cover. It's one of your Concord issues, which, of course, you've got like 60, right? So
with Dave McKenna.
No. Oh, gosh.
Never mind.
I've lost it. I'm so sorry.
I was just curious, that's all.
Yeah, no, you know what, Marion? You've recorded so many. Here it is. It's you and Willie Pickens.
Oh, okay. Now I recognize
I'm trying to find the date on here for you.
No, it was 2 years ago in Chicago.
Yes, recorded live at Joe Siegel's Jazz Showcase in Chicago, Illinois.
Yep, that's it.
See, now, if you weren't running around doing so much stuff, you would remember these things, but you have 60 albums already, Marion, so you're allowed to lose track.
That's awful. I shouldn't have put... interrupted like that.
Oh, you're hysterical. Okay, well, you know what? I would like to, if you don't mind, start, since you have had such a remarkable career, do you mind if I sort of begin at the beginning, as Glinda the Good Witch always said, with 1938, when you were enrolled at the Guildhall School of Music in London? And what happened then? You were in school in London for music, and you're studying classical music, right?
Well... It wasn't really the beginning. I guess it was the beginning of me taking some formal lessons, because I never had up to that point. I'd played by ear since I was 3 years old.
Wow.
So I was overdue for getting some lessons, I can assure you, which I always wanted. My parents were sort of, you play very well by ear, dear. You know, it was one of those things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they didn't really consider it anything too great.
Did they discourage you from becoming professional? I mean, really doing that particular time was pretty extraordinary.
Maybe that was it. They would have liked that. They certainly did discourage me. And then when I was offered this, of all things, a job with a four-piano vaudeville act, that was the last straw. And they didn't want that at all. However, I prevailed, and I did go, and I did play with the four piano act. It probably was the best thing I ever did, because it got me out of the house, and I'm really glad, as I wouldn't be here talking to you.
well, we're really glad too. How old were you when you went to play in vaudeville? Do you remember?
I was about 19.
Very
callow.
Uh-huh. And did you tour the U.S.?
Yes.
You left London?
No, I didn't. We just toured England. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the U.S. until after World War II, and I had married my husband, Jimmy McPartland,
uh-huh,
in Germany.
Okay.
When he was a GI, and I didn't get to the States until he was getting his discharge from the Army over there, and I was finishing up with USO camp shows.
Gotcha. Okay. And so tell us, let's talk about your husband, Jimmy McPartland. He played a cornet, is that correct?
Jimmy was a very well-known and great player from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was with the Army, somebody pulled strings to get him out of combat so he could play his horn.
Really?
And joined my USO show, which is what happened, and we played all over the place, various camps in Belgium and pretty close to the front lines too. So,
wow.
Yeah, I really went through the war, partly in England and partly in France and Germany, but I was very familiar with all aspects of dropping of bombs and all the things that happened. I mean, I really know what it's like to be in a war. So it's terrible to say that I enjoyed it, but playing for the troops was one of the most exciting things I've ever done. And then marrying Jimmy over there, that was very exciting, probably the most exciting thing. And then we came back and started working together.
So you married Jimmy when you were still in Europe, and then you guys moved to... Was it New York you moved to, Marion McPartland?
We came first to Chicago, first to New York, and then back to his hometown of Chicago.
Okay.
and then back to New York again. So, where we stayed in Long Island for many years.
Really?
Yeah.
So now I know I'm speaking to you from Long Island right now. Now, you did a 10-year gig at the Hickory House. Are you telling me you commuted on the Long Island Railroad to get to that?
I didn't. I drove.
You drove? Oh, that's unbelievable. I sort of...
Well, in those days, that was in the 50s, in mm-hmm. those days, there was not that horrendous traffic that there is now. It's funny. I drove back and forth for 10 years with never a problem.
Wow.
Yeah, at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, no problem.
Wow. Well, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the gigs at the Hickory House. You were hired for 2 weeks, right? And then somehow you stayed on for a little longer than that.
excuse me. I guess they didn't know it was going to be such a successful engagement. Hold on one second.
Sure.
I don't know. I took a sip of tea and it went the wrong way.
Oh, I hate when that happens.
We had a broadcast from there. They would broadcast the band, the trio, three times a week, and that gave us a lot of people listening in other parts of the country. So we would leave the Hickory House and tour, and then we would come back again and stay for maybe 6 months, and then we would go out and tour again.
That was a radio program you were broadcast from the Hickory House?
Yes, on NBC. They had a lot of, they called them remotes, and a lot of clubs featured them.
Uh-huh.
A 15 or 20-minute program. We were lucky we had one three times a week.
Wow, that sounds like it was more than kind of extraordinary. And your 2 week engagement turned into a 10-year engagement.
Yes.
At the Hickory House. Now, did Rudy Van Gelder have something to do with the live broadcasts on NBC, or did he? I know that he came by and he archived some of your performances at the Hickory House, and he, of course, was a neophyte at the time, right?
When he was starting out with his studio, that's how long ago I met him. Jesus, it was even in the late 40s, I think, and we went out to his studio. Believe it or not, he wasn't even properly set up, and he wanted to test all the equipment. And I've got records that we made then, but then later on we did make some regular record dates for Savoy at his studio. I'd love to see him. It's been a long time.
Well, he's still kicking and putting together some of the best jazz on CD that's in existence. Am I correct?
That's true. For
those who are not familiar with Rudy Van Gelder, well, I know that Blue Note has re-released some of his recordings, so they're available on CD. But Rudy Van Gelder's been recording jazz since since before I existed.
The 40s, I don't know. You're just a young chick. I know that.
Oh, thanks a lot, babe. You're tuned into Anything Goes on member-supported WFDU-FM. I'm Lise Avery, and we're talking to the great and legendary Marion McPartland. And Marion, there's a picture of you in my office. And, of course, you're standing with a whole bunch of other jazz greats.
Oh, you mean that Great Day in Harlem picture.
Yeah. Tell me about what I would love to have been just hanging out on the street, but you were there. So tell us what went down on that Great Day in Harlem.
Well, the idea of it was for the centerfold of Esquire magazine, which was being put together as an entire jazz magazine for that issue. So that's why they gathered us all up there. And I felt very bad because Jimmy, I couldn't get him out of bed to go with me. We had to be there quite early in the morning, like for musicians at that time, to working till 3 and 4 in the morning, and to have to be somewhere at 10 o'clock.
Right.
A bit early. So he just refused to get up, so I went without him, and I always regretted that because it's such a worldwide picture. Everybody has that picture. I think it's the greatest jazz photo ever taken, and that was, we like to think of it as the golden age of jazz then in the 50s. It was really a good time for jazz.
It was it's an extraordinary photo. Tell us more about, you were one of three women, three women. There was you and
some of the others were. There were a lot of women around. I don't know where they were, like Barbara Carroll and Jackie Kane and Abby Lincoln. They must have also decided not to get up.
Oh, it was just you and Mary Lou Williams and Maxine Sullivan made the date.
Right. Yes, and Mary Lou and I had a chance to chat. And actually, it was like a big social event. And it got started late because Thelonious Monk was late. He spent a lot of time choosing what he would wear because he wanted to stand out. He thought everybody would be in dark suits, so he wore a light suit. Wound up looking like everybody else, I guess. So, Monk was a character, all right.
So. And now, among the people who were there for the Great Day in Harlem photo, how many of them were close friends of yours or people that you had played with, and were there any of those great musicians that were extremely influential in your career?
Well, unfortunately, the guy who really meant a great deal to me, Duke Ellington, was not there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of his sidemen were there. But Mary Lou was somebody that I had admired before I ever left England. And I was friendly with a great many of them, like Dizzy and the guy on the other side of me, Oscar Pettiford, wonderful bass player who used to come into the Hickory House and sit in with me from time to time. Mm-hmm. I knew all of them, if not well. I knew them all, every single one. So, and some of them were close friends, like Vic Dickinson and Buster Bailey, Bud Freeman. Maxine, I love Maxine. She's one of my favorite singers.
Wow. So you really, when you went to have that photo taken, you didn't know how groundbreaking it would be or how historic it would be.
No, I had no idea.
A lot of the people in that photo used to show up at the Hickory House to jam with you as well. Am I correct about that, or to come and just listen?
Oh yeah. In fact, some of the ones who were not in the picture, like. Steve Allen used to come in a lot. He had the Tonight Show at that.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And Duke came in a lot because his press agent was the press agent for the Hickory House, so he would come in and have dinner there, and once in a while he would get up and play with my trio.
Wow. Oh, tell us about the Duke, Marion. I can only read about him and see photographs and... Was he
just a very wonderful musician? Somebody I listened to a lot in England and always admired, not only the orchestra but his piano style. Mm-hmm. He was charming and great fun to be with, and very liking to flirt with everybody. And I was sort of shy in those days, and I would sit at the table with him, and he would chit chat and. And then a lot of times if he was working somewhere in town and I would show up, he would invite me to sit in with the band. I did that a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Marion, I could talk to you all day. Now, how did you become, or how did you seek growth as a musician? Marion McPartland. Now here you were. You at the time you were trying. You were surrounded by, as you said, one of the great times in jazz. And how did you decide what material to play? How did you? What were some of your primary influences in addition to Duke Ellington? What did you look for?
I don't know, just about everybody and everything. I took it all in because I was right in the thick of it, playing it on 52nd Street, and I would go over to Birdland and hear Miles Davis or Dizzy, and then there was another club down the street, Basin Street. I would go there and hear Dave Brubeck. And, I mean, there had to be a natural growth just from being around all these people. And, I mean, I had a wonderful trio. I had Joe Morello on drums, who later went with Dave Brubeck, and I had Bill Crow on bass.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful trio, and we just grew as we went along, you know. And it's one thing about jazz: you don't stop; you just can keep growing. And having had my radio show now for 24, almost 25 years,
uh-huh.
I've managed to grow out of that because I've had so many different kinds of players, not only piano but trombone, cornet, guitar, banjo, all kinds of people who mm-hmm. have influenced me, one might say. I mean, it's really quite a trick to play with all those people and not get in the way. That's what I try to do, I guess.
Yeah, we did play a little bit or an excerpt from your interview with Rosemary Clooney earlier today, and your radio program, Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz, which is on 200 NPR stations. I went to your website, and I was so inspired to move Anything Goes Forward. I cannot tell you. But Concord Records has released some of your interviews with many of these remarkable people. And in 25 years, I guess you have an awful lot of them.
Yeah, and some of my great favorites, like Oscar Peterson,
mm-hmm.
Bill Evans, Mary Lou Williams, Dave McKenna, and Rosemary, of course. We started having singers. We had Tony Bennett. We had Joe Williams. And on and more to come. Now we've had Steely Dan. We're going to have...
Did you really? That's one of these things is not like the other. That's wild.
No.
That's extraordinary.
Well, we want to keep it fresh and different. And
uh-huh.
There's so much great music out there of all kinds. We're going to have Bruce Hornsby.
Wow.
And mingling in with just some, maybe another straight-ahead piano player like Oscar. We've had Oscar a couple of times, actually.
Mm-hmm. And right now I think there's six of them out. There's Oscar Peterson, Bill Evans, Carmen McRae, Chick Corea, Dave Brubeck, Dizzy Gillespie, and Rosie Clooney are out right now. Are there plans to release additional ones, do you know, Marion McPartland? Yeah.
Well, there were a whole lot for Columbus. There's a whole lot that were put out before that are around for they're being sold in on the net probably and in bookshops as a... There's a whole lot of them but these are the ones that they've sort of redone and they've reissued them. But we have more coming along, like Mel Torme, George Shearing.
What a career you've had.
You name it, we've got them all waiting in the wings.
Oh, Marion, wow. Yeah. Now, I just wanted to ask you a couple more questions before I tell people. I don't know if there's any room, I'm betting not, for your 85th birthday celebration at Birdland this Friday. But in the 60s, when jazz wasn't exactly the in thing, what was it like to try and make a living as a jazz player?
Well, I don't know. I guess I've always been rather... innovative, shall we say. I just was furious that things weren't happening. So I started doing a whole big program in the schools to have more kids know about jazz. We did a three-month program in the schools in Long Island.
Wow.
And we would get gigs, and then I started my own record company. Nobody was recording me, so I said, well, I'll record myself. So I started my own record company, which has been mostly picked up by Concord. It's
right.
called Halcyon Records, and it's still viable. And so I did that. I don't know. I just am not somebody who's going to let the grass grow.
Well, that's sort of apparent, Marianne McPartland. Now, at one point, you worked for Benny Goodman in the 60s. Is that right?
I did, 1963.
I heard Benny was a rough guy to gig for.
Well, I thought I was going to, having had my own group, I thought I was going to be great, that Benny would love me. Well, he didn't. He just gave me that weird look that they called the Ray, and I never knew what he wanted. He was a guy that he could sort of let you know with a look what he didn't want, but he couldn't tell you what he did want.
Oh, man.
And once at a party, I said to him, Benny, I know you don't like my playing. Why did you hire me? And he said, I'm damned if I know.
Oh, my gosh. And I'm hoping you kicked him in the shins and walked out, but
I
guess you didn't.
No, I didn't. I said, well, look, why don't you get somebody else to play the show, and I'll just play my trio numbers. Oh, would you do that? Oh, Marion, you're the greatest. Then he thought I was fine. So
that's
what I did for the rest of the tour.
Isn't that something?
I played my own numbers, and then he hired John Bunch, who was a great friend of mine, and he played Benny's numbers. And so we got along all right, but it wasn't the greatest. Because I left feeling that I... you know, that I wasn't doing the right thing. So I went right from the Goodman band to the Menninger Psychiatric Clinic in Topeka, Kansas. And I always tell everybody that Benny Goodman drove me to them. Which he didn't drive me physically in a car, but his behavior really got me there.
Really?
Yeah, and it's probably the best thing I ever did, because it's a wonderful place. I'm still in touch with them, and I did have some psychiatric help for many years, which was great, until I felt like I knew more than the psychiatrist.
Right, right. Well, you know, nowadays almost everybody has had some kind of therapy or been in therapy, but at the time that you did it, I think it was probably a pretty forward-thinking thing to do as well.
Well, I must say, it was great for me at that time. I can see the good points of it. I think you can kind of use it as a crutch and stay on too long. But, I mean, I could see what improvement I got out of it. In fact, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you or have piano jazz because I, at the time, I really didn't have enough confidence in myself, because if I had, I would have, as you say, I would have kicked Benny in the shins. I would have left. But anyway, I got plenty out of it, and I've been very lucky in my life.
Marion, I think that it's gracious of you to say that. I think you've also been moving and shaking. And it is such an honor to speak with you. It really is. And I just want to tell everyone, if there are tickets available, which I'll bet there aren't,
no,
Marion McPartland. Is it sold out? Do you know?
Yeah, they are.
Okay. Well, you can tune into... Do you happen to know offhand what your website is, Marion?
I don't... this is terrible, but I don't even have a computer.
No.
I don't want to know what goes on out there.
Bill Charlap doesn't have one either. Well, he may have a computer, but he refuses to go on the web, have email. So, you know,
fans keep putting up websites for me. There's tons of stuff out there. One of these days, I must go and take a look. But I did want to say that really, the reason things got so good for me was because of Jimmy, because he helped me to get started with my trio, and he helped me get the job at the Hickory House. Jimmy was one person who he he thought I was great, and he gave me so much encouragement.
This is your husband, Jimmy McPartland.
We never had any jealousy. Jimmy was just great.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
How wonderful.
I was very lucky to have him.
Well, Marion, I have to say that it will be an honor to be there on Friday to wish you a happy birthday in person, and I thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
It's really been a pleasure to speak
okay.
with you. And thank you so much for all the inspiration. I'm gonna get on the horn and get Anything Goes on 200 stations this year.
All right. Good luck.
Happy birthday. I'll see you on Friday,
okay,
Marion McPartland.
Honey.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're tuned in to Anything Goes on member-supported WFDU-FM. You've been listening to the legendary piano player, Miss Marion McPartland. And she's going to be 85 years old, actually on Thursday, but the party's on Friday at Birdland. And according to Marion, there are no tickets, but there are tickets to Marion's program, Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz, on NPR. And she's been working for 65 years, bringing jazz to the people. And you can also check out the CDs that have been recently put out by the Jazz Alliance and Concord Records of Marion McPartland's piano jazz interviews. And the one of Rosie Clooney and the one of Dizzy Gillespie, it's just magic stuff. It's 10:47 on the schnoz. Hola, I'm Lise Avery, thanking you for tuning in to Anything Goes here on member-supported WFDU-FM. It's a pleasure to be here. And we're going to hear a little bit more from Miss Marion McPartland and the interviews that and the interview she did with Rosie Clooney in just a minute.
Hi, everybody. This is Keeley Smith, and you're listening to the swinging sounds of Anything Goes with Lise Avery on WFDU-FM.
You know, that's such a wonderful song for you to do, and it's sort of unlikely.
I know.
Do you know
who Cole Porter wrote it for? Roy Rogers.
Oh, really?
It's really true. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, it's funny, because I remember now something you said on stage. You said, I never thought I'd hear Cole Porter and Roy Rogers in the same sentence.
I know, I never thought I'd say it. Never in a million years. Did you know him?
Cole Porter? No, I wish I had.
I did pretty well, yeah.
He was a very lovely man, I understand.
Extraordinary, very, very elegant.